Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast. I am Patrick, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend and colleague, Mr. Tony DiPreto. Tony, how are you doing?
Pretty good. We went through the little tropical storm or whatever last week, and it wasn't too bad. Everybody was still freaking out here because they're still pretty, you know, nervous after the Hurricane Harvey situation.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, luckily it wasn't too bad, and we actually got an extra day off, which was nice.
Oh, hey, there you go. That's nice, I guess, you know, a day off to recover and do whatever needs to be done, cleaned up and stuff. Did your family do okay through the whole thing?
Yeah, we didn't have any problems. Like, in our area, there weren't any problems. So, like, it was like a sunny day mostly. It would rain on and off, but we just took the baby out, did some recreational stuff.
Oh, nice. Very nice. And if I'm being a little hushy, it's because I'm out in the kitchen as opposed to my desk in the bedroom. And so I'm pretty close to my kids' room, so when they're going to sleep, and my wife was real tired, and so I'm just trying to be a good hubby and try to keep the noise down a little bit.
You got to do what I do, man. You got to set up a Cludio.
We're looking to upgrade the whole desk experience, and I think in a few years, we're in an apartment. I think in two or three years, we're going to migrate to an official home, a real house.
Oh, and well, if people don't know, Cludio means that I have all my equipment in a closet. And it's weird, but it's really good for sound. I mean, it's clean. There's no noise, really. There's no AC in here, and the clothes pretty much soak everything up. So
yeah, I imagine it could get a little warm, maybe.
Yeah, but it's good. It keeps us on time. Like, we can't ramble, because if we do, I get really uncomfortable. So
there you go, and then you get cranky. So we're going to talk about your post, Computer Science Empathy, which I thought was a really good post. I'm going to talk about Microsoft's We Want You to Learn Python. We're going to talk about suppliers. I like to call them vendors. I think they're the same thing. I think we're talking about the same thing, right?
Yeah.
But first, just a quick public service announcement out there to all you tech directors and teachers out there. I'm a part of a listserv. And this went around. This was a hot topic for about 3 days. But apparently, students have been finding pirated movies on Google Drive. And they're not sharing them. Like, they're not putting them on Google Drive. They just search Google Drive, and then they type in a very popular movie. And chances are, somebody has that movie on Google Drive somewhere, and they've just have it. The sharing settings say anybody with the link, or anybody on the web.
Right.
And so it shows up in search results, and obviously it gets popular and people click on it. So it keeps rising in search results. And so, and as you know, a lot of teachers walk around the room and they look at their student screens, but a lot of people just look at tabs. And, you know, you can see what a Netflix tab is. You can see this just looks like a Google Drive tab. You know, it has like a little movie icon in there, but just watch out for it. And if you're a tech director and you're getting reports of it, just simply, you know, You're gonna see what student is sucking up your bandwidth. It's gonna be pretty obvious. You'll be able to identify those people and talk to them and put the kibosh on it.
Yeah, and Google and Microsoft both. So, and I don't know about Dropbox, but Google and Microsoft both have DCMA? Is that it? DCMA.
Yeah.
They have like a DCMA bot. That's what I would call it. And if you're running Google Apps for Education or Business, or you're running Office 365 for Education, sometimes you can, if you've got pirated let's just say it's not pirated. Let's just say that you decided to take a popular movie from like a DVD that you bought for your school. You make a copy of it and you put it on your OneDrive or Google Drive to share it with your school. You can show up one day and it's just gone. So you won't get a notice. It'll just be gone. Because if they decide to scan for anything, it's just looking for the metadata in that file. Basically the same way that like the like IMDb databases work, or those other ones that show you like what the movie's going to be and stuff on your phone if you look it up. So they're just matching the metadata. If it matches, it just goes, just disappears.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a violation of terms of service too. I mean, you know, occasionally I'll use a cloud service to put something in to move it. But once it's moved, I'm going to remove it.
Yeah. And if Google were to find it, Google, I have no doubt, I'm sure Microsoft would be the same way. I have no doubt that Google or Microsoft would suspend that individual account immediately. And I don't think there's anything that the system administrator could do to unsuspend that account.
No, if you get a suspended account, I had a student get a suspended account at my previous school, and I had to contact Google support. It took me about an hour and a half to get their account unsuspended.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real, even imagine if it were to happen again, that Google would be like, no. And if it continually happens for your organization, I'm sure Google and Microsoft have every right just to be like, you violated our terms of service so many times where you can't use us anymore. You're done.
If you know, and I don't really want to make this like a topic because you're not supposed to do it, but there are situations where I could see you having a collection of like old DVDs or something, and you can't afford to rebuy them for the school, but people still want the content. You know how to rip them. If you do that, it's not legal, but you have to do it internally. So like if you did decide to do it, you need to purchase a Synology or something like that. You got to put them on that and share it inside the school only. You cannot distribute it. And that's not best practice, but if you're determined to do it, at least do it on your local network and set it up as like a Synology can be set up to stream. Yep. And you can turn the downloads off. That's what I mean. Like, you can't set it up so people can download it and then play it.
They can only stream it.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that's legal, but at least like it's inside your school only and no one else is going to get it.
And just a quick correction, we were wrong, Tony. It's not the DCMA, it's the DMCA. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
And I always mix it up. I don't know why.
I know it's easy, and it's and yeah, there's all sorts of controversy around that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. There's all sorts of shenanigans that are associated with that. So there's that's a rabbit hole that I don't think we're going to dive into tonight.
Not
at all. But anyway, I just want to let people know out there that this is clearly happening, and just be aware of it. Just be aware. Monitor your students. Monitor your teachers, because your teachers are sometimes your worst offenders.
Yeah, definitely.
So and if you're one of those people out there doing that, just don't. Please don't. It's bad practice. Bad practice. Bad things could happen. So
it's not your house. It's your job.
There you go. I like that. So Tony, you wrote actually you didn't really write a piece. You actually had a video.
Yeah, I made a video. So I really didn't know what to name it. I think the name is pretty stupid, but basically, I was noticing at my school, some kids who were, struggling. So they're doing computer science and stuff, and they're working in the library, and I'm in the library, and, I occasionally speak to them. I'm not their teacher. And I started noticing that they were just getting hung up on certain processes, like because they couldn't get past the mechanics of what they were doing, they really weren't thinking about the problems they were working on. So I'm like, hey, you know, like, did you guys study coding before? And they're like, oh, yeah, we went to this class outside of school. So when students get into coding, like if they do hour of code or something like that, they're usually using some kind of online interface that lets them just jump in and start working. When they have to do computer science for AP or IB, they actually have to install Java or Python. They have to build the environment. They have to install the software. They have to do a lot of stuff before anything will even pop up on the screen and say, hello world. And a lot of people, like when they're teaching, they don't think about that pre-assessment process where they're like, have you done programming before? Yes or no. Was it outside of school? Yes or no. What did you do? You're going to find they're doing JavaScript and Scratch and all this other stuff, because those out of school programs, they don't have time. They want the kids to be in in a seat or online and interacting within a few seconds. And you got to remove that barrier. And so I talk about that. And I also talk about making like a template. So I always work with kids to make a working template for anything that they're doing. And I don't go into all the details about how the template works. So let's set it up. Okay, did everybody do this? Yeah. Okay, do this. Does that work? Yes. Okay, save this. Save this as a template. Now, you've got a lot of flexibility. You can say, hey, let's break it. Do this. It breaks. What happened? So now you're working kind of on a cause and effect observation basis. You still haven't explained why it's working, but that's the thing. Like, if the kids get hung up on all the mechanics and if they get hung up on all the terminology, they just kind of freeze. And what you really want them to do is to just get them comfortable working in the programming environment. You want them to connect what they did before to the new stuff. And you just want to remove all those barriers. And the template's really important. If you're doing computer science or anything to do with programming, you should have some templates that they build. Now, I don't think you should give it to them. I think they should build it with you. You should have some templates that they build so that they know what the process is. I'm coding for like 4 hours and all of a sudden my program totally breaks. My teacher said it's probably because something in the basic template, I've accidentally deleted it. They can open it up, they can compare it to the what they've been working on, or they can just start over. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what they're used to doing, because when they're using these programs for learning to code like online or going to one of these extracurricular programs, they have those features where you can start over. It's built in, and that's what the kids are learning with. That's what they're used to. And like, if you want to really teach kids HTML, CSS really fast, you put them on W3 schools. They can learn every single command in like a week or two. Amazing.
All the tabs.
But
yeah,
W3 schools doesn't require you to install a web server. It doesn't require you to make a .ht access file. It doesn't require you to like set permissions on your files. So the kid comes in, they're like, yeah, I know what all these commands are and how to use them. And they sit down and they can't even make a web page work.
Yeah, they don't know how to save the web pages properly. Like, oh, I have a capital letter in there. Well, that's not going to run. You know, it's got to be lowercase. Then why do I need an index page? It's a home.html. Why isn't that my home page? And it's like, well, that's not how, you know. Yeah. Yep. That's a great point.
So, yeah, there's just a separation between, like, actually making stuff and, you know, just kind of experimenting with it. And it's cool. They experiment. That's step one. Now they're interested. But you can't just say, oh, okay, you've been doing programming, so we can just jump in.
Yeah. And that leads me to I think that's really, really good stuff.
And I do have one more point. I was thinking about this one kid. So he came and he was sitting down. He's like, man, I don't understand this stuff at all. Hold. Yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay.
Sorry, there was a noise coming from behind me in the Cludio. All right, you can leave that in. It was funny.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, so this kid's like struggling, and I'm like, this computer science, it's a problem. Like, it's like a word problem, and he's got to solve it. So it's really a math problem that he's got to solve with code.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do you understand this math? Like, if I just wrote this math problem out, could you do it on a piece of paper? And he's kind of looked at me. I'm like, you know, you need to tell your teacher if you don't actually know the math.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter if you can program or not. Like, you have no idea what the math is.
Yeah. You'll never be
like,
able
to. Well, you know, I studied it last year. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything that you studied it last year. I'm going to write this out on a piece of paper. You take this pencil. Can you solve this problem? No. Okay. Well, then you can't program it yet.
Yeah. You don't know what your output is supposed to be. So even if you did think you could program it, it could be completely be wrong, and you'd think it's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And some people are like, wait, but don't. He's using a computer program. Doesn't it have like all this stuff to do math for you? Yes, it does. However, for a lot of these AP and IB curriculums, you're not allowed to leverage all those functions. You've got to teach kids to write their own. So like they can use them, but they won't get points for them on the test. So that's a bad practice. Like in real life, that kid has a million options.
Oh, yeah.
But on the AP exam and the IB exam, that kid's got like two options.
Which is a bit unrealistic. Yeah, I mean, that's
kind
of,
is.
yeah.
It is. But at the same time, I try to look at it like a game. It's like a game you're playing. Like, okay, this is how you win this game. This is how you get these points. I think that's kind of a good way to look at it instead of, oh, when you complete AP Computer Science, you will become a programmer.
No.
Like, no, 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 no. No, you will become a master of AP Computer Science and organizing materials and studying really hard and following instructions.
Yeah, that's it. That's really good. And do you know who wants you to learn programming, Tony? Do you know who wants to learn? Who wants you to learn?
Liam Tung.
Liam Tung from ZDNet wants you to learn. Actually, he doesn't want you to learn. I'm sure he'd be happy if you did, but Microsoft wants you to learn. Microsoft wants you to learn. So Microsoft has a Python, a video series, 44 very short videos. I've seen six of them, and I'm going through them. I will go through all 44 of them, where they teach you Python. Where they teach you Python. But you know what I didn't know, Tony, is that they have a tremendous amount of free stuff that they offer. And most of it's not video series. Most of it is like a PowerPoint or a PDF or and they can take you from super duper beginner to more advanced stuff. But this one is Python, and if you know nothing about programming, this is not the video series for you at all. I mean, not at all.
So you need to do like a primer, something else.
Yeah, yeah. Like they start talking about print, you know, Hello World. So that you don't get to print Hello World until I think episode 5 or 6. And in the first episodes, they just talk about what Python is. Why do people use it? Why do people like it? They try to get you to use Visual Code. I think it's their IDE, their free IDE that they give away.
Okay.
I'm not a big programmer. I know very little about programming. I dabble in it, but I'm telling you right now, people, don't download that turd. Just go get PyCharm. PyCharm SE is free, and it is. Just so much more organized and easier to use. I guess if you're a programmer, and this is much more like a terminal, you know, where you have to type in all the commands to get stuff to, like, if you want to run the program, you have to type the command to run the program. Where PyCharm, you just hit a button and it runs for you. It shows you the command. It's not as if the command is hidden. It shows you the command. You could go down and type in the command if you wanted PyCharm, but just for simplicity, because you're going to be hitting that run button a million times, they just put a run button up there so you don't have to type the command over and over and over again.
Right. And so, that's, you know, people that do stuff like full time for real, they're not sending everything through the command line. It's
no.
just too, it's too time consuming.
It is. It is. But anyway, so.
Except on that movie Swordfish. So. In that movie, it was all command line. It was 12 screens.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of green text and a lot of black screens. And then there was like,
yeah,
like 3D geometric shapes
all over the place.
So,
and he was drinking wine constantly drinking wine.
Yeah. Here is an interest. Wait, I don't mean to interrupt you, but since you said he was drinking wine and I made that joke, this isn't a joke. I read something pretty cool today. Let me just. It's on Slashdot. Where's the set? I'm trying to hurry. So basically, there is a video game made for the Atari, old school Atari 2600. And these guys, I guess these researchers, you know, they found one of the cassettes and they decided to open it up and pull the code off the chip to see how it worked, because here I found it. Because in this game, it's called Entombed. There's actually an adaptive maze, like the maze changes and you're trying to solve it. And they did all this research, and basically they can't figure out how this program works. They can't figure it out. So they put it out there. They started making some phone calls, and they got a hold of some of the original team. And one of the guys said, you know, the guy who wrote the code that makes the maze, he wrote most of it while he was drinking and he was hammered. And he actually has no memory of doing it. It's something ridiculous. So I don't want to misquote it, but I will send you the link right now so you have it.
Yeah,
but,
I'll put it in the show notes.
But I was like, that's crazy. Like, he made this, like, super complicated algorithm. They've got computer scientists and other hobbyists, like, looking at it as we speak to try to figure it out. And this guy's like, yeah, I don't have it. I'm not really sure. I am not really sure how I did it.
That's awesome. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
So, thank you. And awesome. And these courses, they're super practical. So they're not going to, they don't have a project for you to do. You know, for example, when they're talking about the print screen, they're like, why do you, obviously the print screen is so you can print, you know, you can say, hey, what's your name? And then you can say print hello. And then the person's name, whatever they, it's sure there's that, but they say, what if you have thousands of lines of code and it keeps giving you an error and you don't know where the error is? Well, one thing that programmers will do is they'll go through and insert print lines. They're like, so show me this variable after a certain calculation or after an input or a calculation or a change or an introduction of data. They're like, show me this. And so they use it to help debug and find errors, like something really practical. And I never thought of using the print command for doing that. I mean, I'm sure it's very basic coding 101, but I was like, oh, that's really good. And then they move on, they're like, boom. But the series moves very quick, it's pretty fast. And you know, I'm sure we're going to get into other commands, like, you know, if then, if else, loop, loops, for loops, and all these other good stuff. So I'm looking forward to it. I'll give a full review. But
keep us posted.
I will. But they have lots of great stuff. They have a whole website just dedicated to teaching you stuff. You know, you want to build macros for Excel, they have a website that'll help you do that. So it's just pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. Pretty good. I'm going to pull that that link off my Your Phone app.
And paste it in.
And paste it in.
Well, I can paste it. I've opened it up now.
Oh, okay.
I'll just paste it.
All right.
No, wait.
Oh, I got it. Okay. You got it first.
No, it's not working. You should do it.
All right, I'm all over it. So Tony, while I'm doing that, why don't you talk about your final topic?
My passion.
Here. Your passion.
Passion for suppliers and vendors. Okay, so like this week, I had a phone call with another school. And I was looking at some software they're using. I haven't been working in the U.S. for a while, and I'm in an independent school in Houston. So I'm trying to, you know, meet other people working at independent schools, because I found that schools that are similar in the same region tend to use a lot of the same software. So I'm looking over this stuff and that they're showing me. I'm like, you know, this looks really, really out of date. And they're like, yeah. Yeah, they've been working on it for like 5 or 6 years. I was like, what? They're like, yeah, they've been working on it. I feel really bad for them. You know, they've been trying so hard, but like management, they're just going on and on. And I'm like, first off, how do they know about the lives of programmers at a company that they're purchasing stuff from? Who's telling them this stuff? Because I guarantee you they're not really talking to anybody that works at the company. I don't want to break it to people, but you know, a lot of the stuff is outsourced, and a lot of it is outsourced out of the country, which is fine. But past your salesperson, there might not even be anybody. You don't really know. But they're going on and on, and I'm like, so you've been paying for really horrible software for a long time because you feel bad for these people, and they're trying really hard. And I just started thinking about that whole concept, and I'm like, no. You know, if a few customers leave, I guarantee you this stuff will be turned around faster. If everybody is just feeling sorry for them. And then I was like, okay, let's flip this around. And this is what I want everyone to think about. if you've got some kind of software that your school has had for a really long time, and especially if you're in the United States, go back in time to 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, when the economy was horrible. Did any of your vendors contact you and say, you know what, everyone's having a really tough time right now, and we know that, like, private school tuitions are down, enrollment's down, and all that is very true. So, you know what, this year you don't have to pay any licensing, and it's just free.
Yeah, we
did anyone do that?
No.
Did anyone? No. It's never happened. Secondly.
Oh, that's air conditioner. Sorry, guys.
It's okay. When is the last time a vendor called you up and said, you know, five or six other schools paid us to make this, like, function because it's really useful and basically everybody needs it, so we're just going to give it to everybody else for free. We know you need it. We know eventually you're going to ask for it. Before we were charging you, but actually we don't have to make it. See, here's the thing. If they've made this whatever for one school, they have the code. All they have to do is distribute it. And so they are charging you to just copy and paste something else. And just, yeah, there's going to be some things they have to change. But it's not going to be like starting from zero. So if they charge the first person like $2,000 and they charge you $2,000, trust me, it's not the same amount of time or work. They're in it to make money. They have a contract. You sign it. You follow it. You want functions. You have to pay for them. Fine. They're not giving you anything for free. And so I just don't think cutting these people slack is a good idea. Like, you should always have in the back of your mind with any of your big systems, you should always be thinking, what else is out there? How difficult would it be for us to move? How would we do it? That should just be on the table. It's something that you should maybe just brainstorm once or twice a year so that you've got, like, some type of out if you decide you don't like a supplier.
Yeah, and another thing is let's say you really like a supplier, and they're reliable, but, man, they are overcharging you. I'm in a particular situation where I walked in, and we already had an existing contract, and the supplier was charging us way more than what we really should have been paying. We found an alternative, and we couldn't break the contract because we had signed it, so we honored it. But when it was time to re-sign that contract, we moved on, even though we had been working with this company for a while. And they were nice people. They didn't do anything wrong. They just charged us what they thought was a fair price. But in reality, we can get the same product for, 30% cheaper. So.
Yeah. Today I'm in the listserv too now. I joined the listserv here, and people were asking about registration software for parent conferences.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, in 2019, I'm doing that in the browser. I'm not running like something on my network or some weird service.
Oh no.
And, or telling all the parents they have to use Windows or whatever. If it doesn't have an app or it's not mobile responsive, I'm not going to pay for it. And I'm not going to pay a lot for it anyway. And some of the stuff they were putting up, they're like, yeah, we've been using them for like 12 years. It's kind of old and slow, but it gets the job done. I'm like, what?
No, move on. Get out of there.
You're paying the same amount for a new product like that you could get that would be better.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I've just been a little shocked because I think, you know, in international schools, you get a lot more turnover with this stuff because there's always up and down years and in general, like, families move in and out, teachers change, your costs can be a bit more unpredictable. So everyone's always kind of looking to maximize their dollar. And if a supplier starts to be a problem, starts to overcharge, just stops delivering, they disappear from the scene pretty fast.
Yeah. Yeah, word travels really quickly internationally, I find. But another thing, people out there, you don't have to be rude to these people either. You know, I mean, you can, if you've had a working relationship with them and they're just not delivering, or they're delivering the same product and it's, you can get a better product for the same amount of money or even cheaper, then, you know, just tell them, hey, I'm sorry, we're going in a different direction and this is a better fit for us. They're not going to start crying in front of you. and drive their car off a cliff. They're, well, especially not in Indiana. There's not a lot of cliffs. They're going to be fine. It's just business, you know. They're going to move on to the next customer.
You shouldn't be doing their job for them. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Somebody I've been working back and forth with for some tech support, I've asked them the same question 7 or 8 times, and they're always sending me all these instructions and links. Sometimes the links work, sometimes they don't. I'm sure amongst the pile of information they've sent, there's an answer. But here's the thing. The problem that we are having, we shouldn't be having. Tech support told me that only one person can help, and it's this person. I specifically asked for a single answer to a single question. Yes or no, can I get this? And if I can get it, how much is it going to cost? Like, something like that. And they're sending me stuff to research, and I'm not going to do it. And I'm just like, listen, I'm not doing this. I could do it, but this is your job. And if you can't do it, I'm going to call your company and ask for another person to work with.
Yeah.
And they were a little shocked, but I'm like, what is it about this that you don't understand? Like, we are paying you and have already paid you.
Yeah.
And we couldn't get a hold of you for 3 weeks. That's the thing. It's just a perpetual cycle once you get into it. And they'll make you feel like it's your responsibility, but you need to take a step back and say, actually, it's not. I did everything you asked. I made these phone calls. They said that you have to do this for us. You want me to read through this stuff and somehow do it on my own? I probably could, but I don't have the time, and I paid you to do it.
That's right. Yeah. We have our school information system is a pretty big company. And so their first line of support is chat. And so when you open up a chat, and they outsource their chat, so their chat isn't, it's not everybody sitting in a room where they're like, you know what, I don't know this answer, but the person I do know is like three desks down. Give me a second. There's nothing like that. They could be in Washington State. They could be in New York. They could be anywhere in the United States. And so sometimes you get lemons. You call them and it's like their first day and they have no idea. They're just like, I don't know. And so you end the chat and then you open up a new chat and you get somebody different because they have that many people. And you just gotta, yeah. And then they give you a survey and you give them an honest, you know, they're like, no, Johnny did not help me. Johnny made things worse.
Yeah.
So there's always somebody else out there. There is never just one person who can do what the vendor is offering. And if they are the only person, then maybe you shouldn't be working with them. There's probably a reason why they're the only supplier in the city. Because right. The product is probably crap, or it's not very good, or it's so exclusive and so expensive that it's more for, not for schools, but it's probably more for enterprise or corporate.
Right.
Where they can afford it. And did you, I had somebody try to sell us some software and it was $10,000. And when I did some research, I was like, wow, this is incredible software, but it's made for like a school district and we're just one school. It's made for a school district where they're networking and monitoring hundreds, if not thousands, of devices with IP addresses. And I'm like, no, we don't need, this is complete overkill. And when I sat down and talked with the guy, I was like, this is nothing that we can use. It's way overkill. So your suppliers will respect you more.
Yeah, and if you get along with somebody, and you can't afford their product, but they're nice, you put that in your back pocket and you'll run into somebody who needs their service and you refer them.
Yeah.
And that's another reason they're meeting with you. Like, they're trying to expand their network. You don't have to make a deal. And I have a meeting with someone tomorrow and I've already, spoke to them and said, I know that you do really, really big projects, but the projects I want you to look at least in the fall are going to be small. They're not going to be huge payouts. So I understand if you don't want to do it because it's not going to be a lot of money.
Yeah. Yep.
And they said, no, we don't have a relationship with your school. We'd like to build one so we can bid on those larger projects. So we're going to come in and give you our best on the smaller ones. And I'm like, great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've talked with suppliers who have told me, your school is too small. It is not worth our time or money. And they were honest. They're like, or yours, honestly. We don't have the resources to send somebody, a project manager, to here, because that's, you know, security cameras. They go, install, like in the summer, we want a contract that installs hundreds, if not thousands, of security cameras, and here you want us to install 20, and we just don't do that. But they did refer me to some other people, some of their other smaller competitors. They're like, these people might be able to help you more. So they were very honest, and, you know, and we talked about a couple products, and they were helpful. It was really good. It was a good discussion.
Yeah. So just like, you should have a normal, healthy relationship, not some weird codependency. And you definitely should not know about the personal lives of programmers at these companies.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And please, if they take you out to lunch, that you don't owe them anything.
No, they get that paid for. They're not paying for it.
That's a business expense. It doesn't come out of their product.
It comes off the company's like taxes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a company take me out to lunch once, and they're like, we want to talk about disaster relief. And I said, good, I want to talk about disaster relief, because I did. And they said, well, how much, you know, tell us about your servers. And I did. And they're like, oh, you don't have a lot on your servers. And I said, no, we've put almost everything in the cloud. You know what? But what we do have in our servers is important to us, and we would love to be able to back that up, and even locally, possibly even a cloud. And they're like, well, that's just too small for us. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's all right. Let's have a good lunch. And we did. It was nice. But so keep it healthy, people. Keep it healthy.
Yep.
All right, Tony. I don't think I have much else.
That's all I have. I've got to get into this this maze game and figure out how it works.
Man, good luck with that. I think you're going to need at least 11 more screens and at least like 8 bottles of wine.
What I'm thinking is 11 screens. I'm going to wait till the weekend, and like, I got to gamble, but probably the guy was doing like Miller Lite or High Life, so I'm going to try to replicate his environment. He was sitting around in the 80s. He had his Miller Lite or High Life.
Maybe
like Pabst. 12 to 14 cans, maybe some Pabst.
Yeah.
And like some kind of like Cheetos, maybe some Jolt.
That's right, Jolt Cola. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just got to get all that stuff going in my body and then look at it and see if I can solve it.
Yeah. Yes. And you got to be sleep deprived, because I'm sure that's in the equation someplace.
Yeah. Well, in that movie, Hugh Jackman didn't sleep for days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did.
He was going. Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, Swordfish, it's real.
Yeah. The movie is terrible. It's pretty terrible.
It is a really terrible movie.
It does have
it has really good effects.
Yeah, it does. And it has a really cool iridescent car, a TSR. I don't know what it is, but it's a TSR car, and it's iridescent, and it's kind of neat. And apparently it's like a supercar of sorts. That's kind of neat, I guess.
But. Yeah, so those are reasons to watch it only.
Yeah, pretty much.
You could turn the sound off, actually, and watch it.
Yeah, yes. And drink some Jolt Cola.
Yep.
All right. Well, for IT Battle, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling, people.